I'm Heather.
And I'm Susan.
Come along with us on an adventure in the Book of Judges.
Welcome to the club, the Bible Book Club.
Well, in the first episode of Judges, we learned that Judges is the story of the Israelites' tragic propensity to sin and their desperate need for God's grace. And spoiler alert, ours too.
Yeah.
In chapter one, we read the first of two introductions to this book. This intro was a military review, basically, of what the tribes did and didn't do. And they were supposed to conquer all of the Canaanites, A-L-L all, and possess all, A-L-L, of the promised land. However, every tribe failed. They failed to drive out the people of Canaan, and as the chapter progressed, the tribe's failure to take control of that land becomes greater and greater.
Yep. Okay, so this week I have titled, Israel Falls and the Angel Takes a Trip.
Ba-dum-bum.
So here's the setup. In chapter two, we actually have two different scenes. In scene one, the angel takes a trip. Now, in this scene, I picture the angel almost like a parent because it's very specific what this angel does. And it's a parent who kind of like hears a sibling fight going on upstairs and, you know, warns the kids, hey, don't make me come up there. Or maybe the parent runs up the stairs and walks into a disaster in their bedroom and takes one look and says, what have you done? So this is kind of the mindset of this angel.
Sounds
starting
like
in chapter two.
You might have
two.
Done that once or twice, Susan.
Oh, just, you know, five kids, how it goes.
Judges chapter two. The angel of the Lord went up from Gilgal to Bochim and said, I brought you up out of Egypt and led you into the land I swore to give to your ancestors. I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and you shall not make a covenant with the people of this land, but you shall break down their altars. Yet you have disobeyed me. Why have you done this? And I have also said, I will not drive them out before you. They will become traps for you, and their gods will become snares to you.
All right, this is the first angel encounter in the book of Judges. So if you're new with us, this is your first with us. But it is not our first Bible encounter of an angel. In fact, we've had many. The Israelites and the patriarchs before them have had lots of experience with angels. Now, this angel did not just appear as most in the past have. This angel came from somewhere, which we normally don't get. This is unusual. No, normally, they just kind of appear. Specifically, this angel came from Gilgal. Why would we need to know this? Well, God is making a statement. And if you weren't with us in the past, you probably wouldn't see that. Or even if you were...
I was and I didn't see that.
Exactly. If you weren't Jewish, you wouldn't notice that. You would just gloss over that statement. But Gilgal is where Joshua made camp after crossing the Jordan River. So here's how God is making a statement. In Joshua 1, there at Gilgal, God said he had rolled away the reproach of Egypt. So Gilgal means rolled away. In other words, God's is saying, I brought you out of Egypt. I rolled away the reproach of Egypt. Now, in Joshua 4, the tribes set up the 12 stones that they took out of the River Jordan at Gilgal. Why? It was a memorial to all the generations to come of what God had done in that moment. The Israelites had finally arrived in the promised land, and they wanted everyone to remember it. The stones made a statement made by the leader of each of the 12 tribes. They were all there and they all had a part in it. So they wanted every tribe to remember this. Then at Gilgal, God commanded that they all be circumcised, a sign of his covenant with them, because their generation had not been circumcised in the desert as the first one had. And lastly, it was at Gilgal that the Israelites celebrated Passover, the very first in the promised land. The Israelites were now all prepped to claim the land after all this happened at this one place, that camp they set up at Gilgal. So once they had done all that, They're all prepped to claim the land, and Joshua then headed out to Jericho for the very first battle. Now, on the way, he met an angel. The angel said he was the commander of the Lord's army. Joshua was then instructed by the angel with the exact same words as Moses at the burning bush. The angel said, "Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground." These two get these instructions. So again, the angel's like throwing Joshua back to Moses. All this is kind of this, like, these nuanced reminders. Now, the phrase holy ground always indicates that God is present and that a major event, miracle, is about to unfold. So Joshua knows. For Moses, it was when he saw the angel in the burning bush, it was the plague and the escape from Egypt. For Joshua, it will be the battle with the Canaanites. Now remember, he's just coming from Gilgal. All this is tied up to Gilgal. So we are post Moses and Joshua now. So what is the point of the angel taking a trip from Gilgal? The small fact that this current angel in Judges came up from Gilgal is a statement for Israel to remember what had just happened at Gilgal. All of these things. And the angel tells them specifically what to remember. I brought you up out of Egypt under Moses. Remember Moses? And I brought you into the land under Joshua. Remember Joshua? And both times, with Egypt and with the entrance into the promised land, I made a covenant with Israel. First one generation, then the other. And so then he looks at them and he says, "Why have you disobeyed? Why have you broken this covenant?" So this unusual happening of the angel coming up from Gilgal was very, very specific and meant something to the Israelites.
Continuing in verse 4, "When the angel of the Lord had spoken these things to all the Israelites, the people wept aloud, and they called that place Bochim. There they offered sacrifices to the Lord."
Okay, so the very pointed reminder hits the mark and the people weep. And that is why this place is called Bochim, because Bochim means weeping. The symbolism of the city's names, Gilgal and Bochim, represents, again, here's another innuendo, the sad state of the Israelites as we move from the book of Joshua, where Gilgal happened, to Judges, and we're now at Bochim. In Joshua at Gilgal, which means rolled away, the Israelites are in the first camp in the promised land, and the tears of Egypt were rolled back or wiped away. Good news. In Judges at Bochim, the Israelites are back in tears, and it's bad news. Now note, here in Judges 2, the Israelites are weeping, but by the time we get to the last chapter of Judges, the Israelites will be weeping bitterly.
Like it's going to just keep on going downhill from here.
Just so you know where we're going. All right. After Joshua again. So we're going to go back to after Joshua again. This sounds confusing, but it's actually intro number 2. There are two different intros to the book of Joshua. In Judges chapter 1, there was an introduction that focused on Israel's military. You heard kind of Heather give a recap of that. The intro was a summary that described what each tribe did or did not do to claim the land. Judges chapter 2 is an introduction that focuses on Israel's faith. This intro is a summary that describes the people's spiritual spiral downward. Now, the two introductions are a comparison. The entire book of Judges is a cyclical story with many intriguing comparisons and layers of hidden meaning. The author sets us up for what is to come by beginning with an example. Remember, this is the intro that talks about their faith more than their military prowess. So this example of Israel is when all was done well, as a comparison for what is to come when things are not done so well. Of course, the gold standard for what is well is a comparison to Joshua.
Verse 6, "After Joshua had dismissed the Israelites, they went to take possession of the land, each to their own inheritance. The people served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and of the elders who outlived him and who had seen all the great things the Lord had done for Israel. Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, Lord, died at the age of 110, and they buried him in the land of his inheritance at Timrah Heres, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gash.
Yada, yada, yada. We could just gloss over this because it sounds like so much of what we've heard before.
But he died. Why would we gloss over that? It's so sad.
Well, not only that, just think about how they describe him. And this is where he is the gold standard in this description. First, Joshua is given a very prestigious title here. It says, Joshua, the servant of the Lord. This title has previously only been given to Moses. Mm. And in the future, there's just one more person who's going to get it, only David. So, you know, the servant of the Lord was a big deal. And the author here is already telling us no one's going to compare to this guy. During Joshua's time and those for a while after him, all was good. It said the people throughout his lifetime and then the people and the elders who outlived him, they all obeyed. All is good. Joshua then dismisses everyone to live the life God had promised. The people are happy and grateful and serve the Lord through Joshua's life and throughout the life of the elders and those who had seen all the great things the Lord had done. Of course, seeing is believing, they say. It is easy to believe when you have seen the miracles. But what about the generations who hadn't seen? And what about us? In John 20, in a conversation between Jesus and Thomas, we read this.
John 20, verse 24. Now, Thomas, also known as Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he had said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger in here and see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. But blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed."
So really for us, we can relate to those Israelites who came after Joshua's time, the ones who did not see the great things the Lord had done, because it is hard to believe without seeing. However, there's a promise in what Heather just read. Blessed are those who do believe even today, even though they have not seen.
Because we only have this book, the Bible, which is correct. Why, congratulations, you're actually reading it and you know what has happened, but it's different than actually being there and living it.
And you know, that's why Heather and I take so much joy in doing this podcast, is because we've probably learned way more than y'all do. But it is so important to our faith to kind of look back and believe and learn from the mistakes, like the Israelites who didn't believe because they didn't see. And just one or two generations, they had already forgotten. Well, hopefully, with the help of the Holy Spirit, we are faring better than those Israelites that didn't see all that Joshua's people saw, because Israel falls hard after Joshua, and not just once. In the book of Judges, we will cover six major cycles of sin where the Israelites fall.
Verse 10, after that whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what the Lord had done for Israel. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals.
The new generation of Israelites did not know the Lord. They had lost the gospel. The good news of how they were saved from slavery in Egypt, had made a covenant relationship with God, and had been brought into the promised land. And almost back to back in verses 8 and 11, we can see the stark contrast between Joshua, who's called the servant of the Lord, and this new generation that served the Baals. Why? How did this happen so quickly in just one or two generations? Well, because they did not know and serve the one true God. There was a void in their heart that needed to be filled. And they filled it by serving false gods because militarily they had not kicked out the Canaanites, it was available to them.
And really, we all serve false gods. So for us, it might not be an Asherah pole or a statue of Baal, the god, but it could be a purse, maybe sometimes in my case, or it could be your house, or it could be your job. It could be whatever is taking your attention, whatever in your
could
life
be
you're placing
those cute clothes
over.
That Heather's always wearing. We just talked about that today when she walked in.
Whatever it is, sometimes it could be your spouse. If you're putting anything over the Lord in your life, then you need to do a little gut check and write that because you have an idol.
Idols come in all shapes and colors. Okay, this phrase that Heather just read in verse 11, it went like this: then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, will be repeated six more times in the book of Judges, and it introduces that cycle of sin. Now, the first time sets the stage for the six cycles of sin, and here is how each cycle goes. It's very repetitive, different story every time, different hero, and those judges are fascinating. We're going to really have fun with this.
But you're right, watch for it.
Yeah,
they'll see the patterns now that they know to look for it.
Exactly. So here's how it goes. First, the people rebel. Then there will be a statement that Israel did evil in the eyes of the Lord that always introduces a new cycle. Then there's a description of that evil. Then God becomes angry with them. Then the Israelites become oppressed by enemies for a specific number of years. Then they cry out in distress or repentance to God. Then God saves them by sending a leader or judge. Then the leader defeats the enemy. Then there is peace for a certain number of years. But of course, then the leader dies, and then Israel does evil in the eyes of the Lord. And the cycle repeats, but each time in these six cycles, the rebellion is a little bit worse, and the repentance is a little less heartfelt, and the judges are a little more flawed.
And so now you can look forward as we're reading this story, but you can level up and start to look forward in your own life as well.
Exactly. You don't want to go the ways of the Israelites, that's for sure.
Just catch yourself. Like it's that easy.
Yeah.
All right. Continuing on in verse 12. They forsook the Lord, the God of their ancestors, who had brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshiped various gods of the peoples around them. They aroused the Lord's anger because they forsook him and served Baal and the Asherahs.
All right. The description of the evil is this. And remember, we're in an introduction, so this is kind of an overview. They worshiped various gods of the people around them, because of course, militarily, they didn't kick them out, and served Baal and Ashtoreths. Now, who is Baal or the Baals? Baal was a title, actually. It meant divine lord, master. So that should give you a red flag right there. We don't want to call anyone divine lord except the Lord. Now, the Baals were not necessarily different gods. So again, the commentaries kind of differ in this, and it could go either way throughout the Old Testament. Perhaps the different Baals were just local manifestations of the same God, such as Baal of Tamar in Judges 20. Like they add a location to it. On the other hand, it could be that the Israelites saw them as distinct gods, such as Baal Berith, the Baal of the covenant in Judges 20 that we're going to meet. So you kind of see that little nuance. It's like Baal, divine Lord, master of something or of some place. We just don't know. Baal worship involved fertility practices, prostitution, and adultery. We do know that. Now, Baal's companion here is Ashtoreth or Astarte, the goddess of fertility and also war. Notice Baal is masculine and Astarte is feminine. There are four verses in the Old Testament that pair this god and goddess together. And each time it's really clear that the Israelites, by worshiping them, have forsaken the one true God and prostituted or forsaken or served this god and goddess together. Bad combo, these two.
Verse 14, in his anger against Israel, the Lord gave them into the hands of raiders who plundered them. He sold them into the hands of their enemies all around, whom they were no longer able to resist. Whenever Israel went out to fight, the hand of the Lord was against them to defeat them. just as he had sworn to them. They were in great distress. Then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hands of these raiders. Yet they would not listen to the judges, but prostituted themselves to other gods and worshiped them.
So this intro is kind of giving us a, you know, foreshadowing of what's to come. They're going to prostitute themselves to these foreign gods, and God's going to give them over to the enemies around them. And then he's going to raise up these judges, he says, who are going to save them. So what does it mean that they prostituted themselves? It means that they have been unfaithful to God in the worst way, in a way that was relevant then and relevant today. They broke the first commandment in the Old Testament in Exodus 20,
which says this in verse 3, "You shall have no other gods before me."
And they broke the greatest commandment in the New Testament in Matthew 22.
Verse 36, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment."
So whether it's the Old Testament or the New Testament, God has clearly made a statement to us that we are to put him first. And the covenant between Israel and God was like a marriage. So God uses prostitution as a metaphor for Israel when they leave him to worship other gods. God sees all idolatry as adultery. Whether Israel or us, when we serve an idol, we enter into an intense relationship with that idol. And we become vulnerable to that idol, and we can even become a slave to it. In both the Old and the New Testament, God calls himself, or Jesus, the bridegroom. And he calls the Israelites, or us, the church, as the bride. In both the covenant God had with Israel and the new covenant God has with us, he wants a deep, faithful relationship. A relationship that frees us from slavery. A relationship that is eternal, like a marriage. However, as in marriage, the bridegroom is jealous of his bride. He will not share her, and he will be angry if she is unfaithful. His anger is an expression of love. He loves his people, the Israelites then, and the church now. And as we will see in the book of Hosea, when we get there, he is a faithful, forgiving husband, desiring only for the bride to return to him when she is unfaithful. Unfortunately, in Judges, the return is cyclical and not a happily ever after story. So back to our story of the new generation of Israelites that came after Joshua.
Verse 17, they quickly turned from the ways of their ancestors who had been obedient to the Lord's commands. Whenever the Lord raised up a judge for them, he was with the judge and saved them out of the hands of their enemies as long as the judge lived. For the Lord relented because of their groaning under those who oppressed and afflicted them. But when the judge died, the people returned to the ways even more corrupt than those of their ancestors, following other gods and serving and worshiping them. They refused to give up their evil practices and stubborn ways. Therefore, the Lord was very angry with Israel and said, "Because this nation has violated the covenant I ordained for their ancestors and has not listened to me, I will no longer drive out before them any of the nations Joshua left when he died. I will use them to test Israel and see whether they will keep the way of the Lord and walk in it as their ancestors did." The Lord had allowed those nations to remain. He did not drive them out at once by giving them into the hands of Joshua.
So the cycle is super clear. He's kind of setting us up for what's going to happen. Israel failed to keep the covenant. They rebelled and disobeyed, and God was angry. And he just keeps going through the cycle of being angry with them. So he allows the other nations to oppress the Israelites because he had warned them of that, that if they didn't drive them out, that they would become a problem. The people turned to God. God sent judges to deliver them, and then peace would resume. The judge would die and Israel would rebel again, but each time it got worse. Now, throughout Judges, we must remember that the anger God felt was also a deep sadness. The people that God loved, the Israelites, whom he wanted to bless with prosperity and land and had promised them for decades, were destroying themselves. They were following the Canaanites, the very people God had spoken of to Abraham, the people whom God warned would become so evil that in time, Abraham's people, the Israelites, would replace them. That time had come. Yet the Israelites were blind to the irony that they were becoming like the Canaanites, the very people God had said needed to be annihilated because their evil was so great. And all because they were being disobedient. They were becoming the people that then would probably need to be destroyed because they were as bad as the people they were supposed to replace. So God gave Israel a test. Chapter 3.
These are the nations the Lord left to test all those Israelites who had not experienced any of the wars in Canaan. He did this only to teach warfare to the descendants of the Israelites who had not had previous battle experience. The five rulers of the Philistines, all the Canaanites, the Sidonians, and the Hivites living in the Lebanon mountains from Mount Baal Hermon to Lebo Harmath, they were left to test the Israelites to see whether they would obey the Lord's commands, which he had given their ancestors through Moses. The Israelites lived among the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. They took their daughters in marriage and gave their own daughters to their sons and served their gods.
So God leaves these enemy nations in the Promised Land for two reasons. First, to test the new generation of Israelites to see if they would keep the covenant. And second, to teach the new generation how to fight. Now that seems kind of weird to us, but we still know from this generation, there's going to come other generations all through the line of Judah. And one day that Savior is going to come. But we know that David's time is coming and there's going to be lots of fighting.
Can't wait for that.
And so David, he comes from the tribe of Judah and they're going to have to know how to fight. So again, this is all part of the plan. He knows what he's doing and he's not going to totally eradicate the Canaanites for the Israelites because they were supposed to have some skin in the game.
They were supposed to do it themselves.
Yeah. Well, he was going to do it for them. He pretty much said, the victory is yours, but you got to show up. And they're not showing up. They're prostituting themselves to other gods. So this is his test. He's leaving it. And there's always a remnant of faithful. And we're going to find that to be true. But the final conclusion of this second introduction to Judges is focusing on Israel's spiritual faith. And it highlights in the end these three major problems. The Israelites are now living among the Canaanites. They're all living together. They are intermarrying with them, which we know is always a problem. And they are serving their gods. But God has a plan. Now, sometimes his plans are a little bit unusual. And Ehud's experience in the next episode has humorous overtones that one would not expect in such a serious book. But you know, God's ways are there for us. And I think he likes to chuckle every once in a while.
He invented a sense of humor.
Yeah, he's got it for sure.
What's a club without friends? If you're enjoying the Bible Book Club, why don't you share it? And then you can say,
Welcome to the club.
New episodes drop every Monday and get all episodes now on Amazon Music. As always, head over to susanmee.com/Bible Book Club for show notes from today's episode. Bible Book Club is hosted by Susan Merrill and Heather Rubio, edited by Buck Buchanan, produced by Haley Mawat.